Welcome to No Truck Stops, a Pac-12 podcast brought to you by Home Field Apparel. I'm Carlos at Equity Bruin. Joining me live is Reed at Pac-10 Reed.
Give us 10 teams.
Give us 10 teams. And joining us, special guest, Maddie at WNBA Data. Maddie does a lot of really cool stuff on women's hoops broadly, WNBA specifically, and even more specifically, Pac-12 and Washington women's hoops. Maddie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
You were very famous for your TikToks. I don't know if I'm saying, I am not a TikTok user, unfortunately. My partner is, she's like, oh, when are you going to get Maddie WNBA Data on No Truck Stops? You should get her on your podcast. I don't know why you're not talking to her. I was like, no, you're totally right. We should. And we finally figured out a way to do it. So we're really excited to get to talk to you. I thought we could just get right into it. Why not? Why don't we start with the Pac-12 Women's Championship game in the tournament? USC beat Stanford 74-61. I'm curious to hear, Maddie, you obviously watched this game late after some antics from another conference decided to rule the day for that moment. What did you think of this game and this? And were you shocked by USC beating Stanford?
Yeah, so what I thought of this game, honestly, it was a little boring, to be honest, coming off of the SEC championship. Yeah, it was a little bit boring, but, you know, I wasn't that surprised by the outcome. I recently made a YouTube video basically like re-ranking all of the Pac-12 women's basketball teams based on like who's beaten who and everything. And like USC was like clearly at the top of that, which is really interesting because they're only like, I guess, second or third regular season just based on wins alone. And Stanford like is bumped down to fourth based on that ranking. So I wasn't too surprised, but I was also like happy that my YouTube video calculation came true.
Yeah, that worked out well. Yeah, talk a little bit about your calculation. Now, if I remember correctly, I did not get to watch that video. I will, I promise. But I did watch some previous rankings you've done using, I think it was PageRank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's like the Google PageRank algorithm. Sometimes it's also just called like the Markov method. And basically what it is, it's like you imagine that you're just like a fair weather fan. You only like to be a fan of teams that win. So you randomly choose a team to start with. Maybe you start with Wazoo or something. And then Wazoo has like this list of teams that they've lost to. So you're like, okay, well, Wazoo has lost to these teams. I'm going to randomly pick one of those teams that they lost to jump to. So they lost to UW. So maybe I'm a UW fan now. And then I pick randomly out of those teams that beat UW to become a fan of. And it's like, yeah, obviously you'll just keep cycling around forever unless there's an undefeated team, but not in this case. Yeah, and then the PageRank thing basically calculates the percentage of time you would spend as a fan of each team. So when I did that before the Pac-12 tournament, I think it was like 14.5% of the time you would be a USC fan. And that was the top. And you would be like an Oregon fan, like 0.8% of the time.
Reed, you're an anomaly. I don't know if you knew that.
Brutal. That pretty much speaks to my journey as a fan this season, I would say.
Yeah, not been fun. Well, thanks for sharing that. I was really curious about it. I mean, I also know you're a fan of other very complex analytic methods, such as, I think, rolling a 12-sided die and deciding that Cal would win. Unfortunately, that didn't come true. Would you like to walk back any of your... Would you like to change the algorithm on that?
No. Yeah, the logic behind that, you know, it's just like, it feels like anyone in the Pac-12 can beat anyone, except maybe Oregon, but... and Arizona State most of the time. But yeah, I thought the chances of predicting the Pac-12 tournament were as good as rolling a 12-sided dice. And yeah, I actually rolled it twice and it said Cal twice. And Cal, I think Cal would have beat Stanford if Michelle Onya didn't get elbowed in the face or whatever happened. But yeah, we'll never know if Cal would have won if that didn't happen.
The gods, the basketball gods were not looking looking down kindly on that roll of the dice. Well, how did you come to Pac-12 women's hoops? I mean, are you a Washington? I mean, I know you're a Washington fan. Have you paid attention a lot to Washington? And how did you get into all this?
Yeah. So it really started more like when I started getting into the WNBA, which was a few years ago. Like, I'd always liked sports, but I never really like got that into like following any particular sport. I guess I like watched a lot of YouTube videos about the NFL when I was in like high school for some reason. But yeah, I guess most content is about like the NFL, or at least it was back then. Yeah. And then the last few years I got into the WNBA. And then when the WNBA season ended once, my girlfriend and I were like, well, I guess we should go to UW basketball games. Cause yeah, I'm a grad student at UW and I also went there for undergrad and she went there for undergrad. So yeah, that's how that kind of started for us.
Yeah, how you got stuck in this weird conference. It's been a fun season. I know that there have been a lot of, you and I have talked about how the Pac-12 needs as many teams as possible in the tournament. We've got to go back to 2014 and get a hashtag going, like, you know, let them in or let 10 in or something like that. What have been your overall impressions of the Pac-12 women's basketball season? Like, have you enjoyed it? Have you found it to be a fun experience? Do you feel like the league is underrated, overrated? Like, what's your general view of the league this year?
It's definitely underrated, or at least it started off underrated, and now I think some teams are getting to be overrated. This isn't like deep analysis or anything, but it feels like there's some teams that are on the decline, such as Utah and Colorado potentially. And again, that's not based on any like specific analysis or anything, but yeah, it feels like for the most part, yeah, typically the Pac-12 seemed like it was like overlooked. When I like see other people's content about women's basketball, it's not usually super focused on the Pac-12 like it should be.
Which is weird, because this league has several, I mean, top 10, top 15 type teams. And they have they're about to get anywhere from 2 to 3 one seeds in the NCAA tournament. Ironically, not the overall number one seed. They will certainly get 6 teams. There's a possibility they get anywhere up to 8. But despite all that, it feels like the discourse is on South Carolina and Caitlin Clark nationally, obviously. And then, you know, once you get a little bit deeper, it's about like LSU, Ohio State, all these other teams. But it does feel like the Pac-12 gets left out. Do you have any conjectures as to why that is? It seems weird to me.
I don't know. There's probably some more clear answers that I'm not thinking of. I guess like there is just like East Coast bias in like a lot of sports, especially it feels like in the WNBA too. Like everyone loves the Liberty for some reason, but yeah, I don't.
Yeah, my because I think about this all the time and I like to make myself mad. My conjecture is that I love the, I'm going to run this by you and see what you think. I love the Pac-12 networks. I think that they're fantastic. I think that no one gives this conference its credit and covers this conference as well as the Pac-12 networks does. But it's kind of hard to access. Like, I know that people think that that's not, but I think it's true that it's hard to access. And it's easy when, you know, Iowa is playing, I don't know, some Big Ten team. I don't really pay attention to them. Michigan or something. And they're playing them on ESPN2, and it's just easier for people to tune in and watch, right? Or South Carolina is playing, like, fucking Tennessee or something, and it's easy for people to tune in and watch because it's on ESPN. My view is that so much of it has to do with, like, their visibility on these big networks. Do you agree? Do you feel like that's true, or do you feel like there's probably something else going on that's deeper than that?
I agree. I think that's like the obvious answer that I was missing. I don't think they even had one of their, like, the ESPN had one of their game days at a Pac-12 game.
No,
I don't
they
think
did not.
This year.
That's right.
Yeah, like they couldn't even do it when like the LA schools played each other or something. Like, I feel like that's relatively simple to put together.
Yeah, and they probably have studios in LA. I mean, they have the infrastructure for that.
Yeah, but that definitely feels like it. The Pac-12 network, like, I have DirecTV and the Pac-12 network isn't on there, so we have to like get something else. So yeah, it's
secret,
not very accessible.
YouTube VPN Networks International. For those who don't know that, that's a fun trick, although that's going to be useless in about 3 weeks here. But Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I've been really, it's been frustrating to kind of, I obviously pay extra money to watch the Pac-12. I like have had the Pac-12 networks for like several years now and have made the decision to do that. But like, I cannot imagine how high of a bar it is. It just feels like it's so accessible. And I, you know, I'll see South Carolina even trending on Twitter after beating who knows whoever team. And it's like, we've got a classic here in UCLA, USC in either one of the first two games and nothing. I guess it feels like crickets, and it's bizarre because it's not for lack of star power either. So it's frustrating. I don't know, Reed, if you had a question or thing you want to run by Maddie to check your thinking.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I definitely agree. It's been laid the most bare, I think, in women's hoops, especially because they've been top 10 matchups that have been hidden on the Pac-12 network. In so many other sports where we failed, this is the one where like we've actually had the blockbuster matchups, and I think it's just shown that lack of infrastructure and accessibility. But yeah, I wanted to circle back, I guess, to the USC Stanford game and kind of how you feel about USC, because to me, you know, this is the low hanging fruit takeaway, but I think you compare this USC Stanford game to the first one and look at like game one, Juju Watkins goes wild from the field, 26 shot attempts, 51 points, just completely carries the team on her back. And then you see it this go around and she's 2 for 15, single digit points. Everyone else steps up. And it seemed like that answered a lot of questions about like, is this just a one woman show or is this something more sustainable? It looked like on Sunday that it was certainly more sustainable. Do you feel like you learned something new in that game? And if the weakness for USC isn't, you know, just needing Juju Watkins to score 30 to win, what is the weakness for them?
Yeah, I think that point about like the difference in how this game turned out, like Juju scoring 51 or whatever, and then scoring single digits is like one of the main takeaways for me too. I don't remember your exact question, but like one of my other like thoughts, like related to this conversation was like in my ranking that I did, we noticed how Stanford had one of the easier schedules, you know, and they had only played USC that one time and they lost when Juju scored 51. But I think it's like telling when the teams play again and like the same thing happens. Like if Stanford were to like even it up, like I think then we would say like, oh yeah, Stanford is great. But now like that USC was able to do it again, but do it in a different way, I think that shows that they are like national title contenders to me. And I previously was kind of on the same boat of like, it's just Juju Watkins and who knows who else, because they never mention her name on the broadcast or like the other players' names. But now I know who the other players are because they actually mentioned them and they were doing a lot in the championship game.
I wanted to circle back to that because I did watch that video where you said, where I think you counted, I think, the number of times Juju Watkins gets mentioned versus I think it was how much she scored. Are you a Juju Watkins hater?
No, I'm not a Juju Watkins hater, but yeah, I think her mentions that game were like, they've said her name like 150 times or something. My girlfriend was the one that counted it. Mm. Yeah, it was just like pretty disproportionate to what was actually happening. So I'm not a hater, but I'm more of a hater of when the announcers just like say the star's name 100 times, like Juju Watkins sitting on the bench, drinking water. That's basically what was happening when UW played USC.
Yeah, that is true. Although I find myself, when I watch USC games, up until really this game, I find myself talking about Juju Watkins more than I would expect. I mean, just the way that she impacts the game defensively is like absurd. She's like, I think she was kind of robbed of an all conference defensive spot. But you're right. I think she is like, you know, what was that meme? It was like, white people no longer say ball hog. They now say heliocentric. This is a heliocentric, offense for USC. Absolutely. And so I think that definitely that definitely comes through. I'm curious to hear, I guess I'm going to make you mention Juju Watkins now and make you talk about Juju Watkins a lot. What do you feel like? I mean, she's had an absurd freshman season. She's going to be National Freshman of the Year. She's obviously was the star player for this USC team, even if in the Stanford game they sort of used her more as a decoy and were using her gravity to get stuff for other players. But in general, she's had a pretty remarkable freshman season. What do you feel like in 2 years? Like, if you were projecting 2 years, like, where do you think she like lands in like pantheon of like women's college basketball greats?
That's a big question. It's also kind of weird because now like the conferences are changing, so we're gonna have to like think of this in the context of the Big Ten. But I think honestly, looking at the teams that are in the Big Ten, there's like three ranked teams or something compared to the Pac-12. Well, I guess like UCLA is coming too, right? So I think Juju could end up being like really high up there, especially since she's like getting basically like the freshman scoring record, I think, in all of D1, I think it is, or something. I think she could, she could end up, I don't know, maybe she could break the scoring record as well based on how things are going. But yeah, I think she has a lot that she can accomplish in her college career.
Yeah. It's still obviously very early on, has done quite a bit of that. Pac-12 sickos, it is women's basketball season. If you have not been keeping up with the Pac-12 women's basketball, you haven't been listening to our episodes, Pac-12 women's hoops is on a damn heater. They have several top 10 teams. They look like they have four of the best teams in the country, maybe five of the top six or seven. Pac-12 women's basketball is on another level, and you should support your women's teams by going to Homefield and buying one of their shirts. One of my favorite shirts right now in the Homefield UCLA collection is this UCLA women's basketball shirt commemorating their 1978 national championship. It is a gorgeous shirt. It's got this lovely cream color, this vintage 1970s logo and design. It's gorgeous. It's super soft. It's super comfortable. I really enjoy it. There's a lot of really great shirts out there commemorating women's basketball all across the Pac-12. You should go check that out. These shirts are comfortable. They're incredible. They're great to look at. I get comments on them all the time. People being like on the streets just saying, "Where'd you get that shirt? That's cool." Especially if you live in a college town where people actually care about these things. I think you'd stand out. Go check that out at homefieldapparel.com. You can save if you're a first-time customer by entering the code NOTRUCKSTOPS23 at checkout. One other thing that you've mentioned, just thinking about USC Stanford, I think you have alluded to Stanford being, I mean, not just you, I think many people have alluded to Stanford being potentially a little fraudulent. I'm curious if like your suspicions were confirmed in this game, if you feel like you don't really take much away from it on the Stanford's end, do you feel like they're a little fraudulent?
Yeah, like maybe fraudulent might not be the right word. I know like I do use that word sometimes, but I think I do think Tar Vanderveer is a really good coach. I do feel like there's a chance Stanford could somehow like win the national championship somehow, just like brute force it. But yeah, I think you might have said it, Carlos, that they're like missing something, like they're missing like guard play. And that's how I feel like when I'm watching them, it feels like kind of incomplete. And that's not very analytical, but there's something else I was going to say that I forgot. Oh yeah. And this is like kind of related to like the conversation of people overlooking the Pac-12. I also feel like people overlooking the Pac-12 leads people to overrate Stanford. Cause I don't feel like Stanford, this is my opinion, should be number four in the country right now. Or like, it's weird that they lost to USC and USC is three and Stanford is four. So I don't know if I agree with that. In that way, I would say maybe they're fraudulent or they're not. I don't think they're worth a fourth in the country.
Yeah, they have not felt at many times throughout the season, like the best team in the Pac-12. It feels like we've cycled through maybe for a couple of weeks there, but it seems like we've cycled through UCLA being that for a while. And then it was, I mean, kind of Oregon State looked like that for a little bit. And then Colorado looked like that for a stretch in January. And then, you know, maybe Stanford had a couple weeks here and there, but it never felt like they were consistently the best team in the Pac-12. So it's interesting. I think that's a good point that the Pac-12 being overlooked, it's like, well, okay, Stanford's there. Like, Tara Vanderveer's there. Cameron Brink is there. People know those names. They're still winning. Cool. They probably should be there. But it hasn't really felt that way for people who are watching the games. So I think that makes sense. I'm curious. Grapes in the chat says Stanford shouldn't be getting this huge share of the little attention this conference gets. And it's absolutely true. So I'll turn this into a question for you, Maddie. Is there a team that you think has gotten overlooked this season that you feel like, why aren't people talking about this team more?
Well, my cop-out answer is Washington.
talk to us about Washington.
Is a very weird team. I know you know, because they have one of the slowest paces in the country. I don't know exactly what it is, but basically they're told to run out the shot clock every offensive possession. Like, this is like what they're coached to do, apparently. They take whatever shot they get after 30 seconds or whatever have elapsed. And they're also pretty good on defense. You could say, like, part of why they're good on defense is because there's so few possessions, but they are very good on defense. Talay Daniels is a great shot blocker, and Jaden Noble is also a great player who really, like, sets the tone on defense a lot of the times. So I feel like people overlook Washington because maybe their record isn't where it should be, to be honest. But they did beat USC at USC. When they played UCLA, it was kind of close near until like the fourth quarter, really slow. But I know Lauren Betts wasn't in that game. And they also beat Utah at Utah, and they beat Oregon State. But I know Reagan Beers wasn't there without Reagan Beers, as they say. But I feel like Washington is going to be like one of the teams that barely misses the NCAA tournament that could honestly maybe win an NCAA tournament game if they had a right matchup, or honestly they could get blown out in the first round of the NCAA tournament if if things go wrong. Yeah, so they either barely win games, or they just don't get close.
To your point about Washington's defense, they are fifth in the Pac-12, which is good in defensive rating, points scored allowed per 100 possessions, for those out there who aren't familiar. So I think their defense that's been a calling card. They play slow as hell. I think I love, as a UCLA men's basketball enjoyer, and a Mick Cronin enjoyer, for those who don't know or are watching this, turns everything into a mud fight, turns everything into the slowest, nastiest, ugliest basketball game you've ever seen. And for that reason, I really love Washington basketball, because they just, Dina Langley just like makes all of those games into, you know, it's like if Washington's going to win, it's because they're going to make you play a slow game and make it feel like you're playing basketball in like the sand. And that's what it feels like. And it's kind of cool to watch, and they've done it successfully, especially late in the season. When they kind of had those wins against Oregon State, had those wins against Utah, and were kind of hanging tough for a good stretch of this game. Do you feel like, but are you frustrated with like the lack, because the big thing is that the lack of offense has been has been brutal for Washington. Do you, what's gone wrong there on the offensive end? They're 10th in the Pac-12 in offensive rating. Like, what's been
it's
the
hard
deal
to say
there?
They do have some really good shooters in like Hannah Steins and Ella Dean, and of course like Talay Daniels like down low, but I think like my thing that I dislike the most about UW women's basketball this year is Lauren Schwartz, to be honest, who is, I think she's a fifth year senior, and she came with Tina Langley from Rice. And sometimes, like, when she has the ball, I don't know, like, what she's thinking. Like, her shots are just, like, not it. Honestly, she's the reason that UW has won a lot of their games, I feel like, or, like, gotten close. Like, she makes some clutch shots. But, yeah, I also feel like she's, I don't know, like, what her decision making, like what's going on in her head. So, yeah, not that I hate her. Yeah, like Joe said, she hesitates all the time. She hesitates and then still takes a shot. And then I'm like, what's going on? But yeah, so I'm very excited to see, like, you know, thanks for the memories, whatever. But I'm excited to see what UW ends up being like without Lauren Schwartz.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the discourse around hoopers versus basketball players.
Have
you heard this before? Oh my goodness. Let's play a little hoopers versus basketball players. So the distinction is out there in like the, I think this started in the men's NBA planet. They talked about players being either hoopers or basketball players. And I think there's a really, there's some like, you know, kind of like ambiguous description of it, but it's basketball players, I think, are like really fundamental and skilled, and they're both can be good. Neither is bad or good, but they're meant to be skilled and fundamental and kind of like straight-laced, and they make the right reads and just play the right way, I guess, depending on who's right way. And then hoopers are a little more chaotic. They get their own shots. They look cool as hell. I think the example that the men's NBA folks use is like Allen Iverson is a hooper and Tim Duncan was a basketball player. I don't know what other corollaries there might be, but I don't know, Reed, did I explain that right?
Yeah, I think that's a proper explanation.
Yeah. So, Reed, as I say my name, you should come up with a name that you want to ask Maddie, whether they're a hooper or a basketball player. We've played this with a lot of people, so I think it's always fun to talk about. So I'm going to give you a name of a women's basketball player this year, and I'd love to hear whether you think they're a hooper or a basketball player based on the way they play. We'll start with one here. We'll start with one that we have talked a lot about and say her name one more time. Juju Watkins, what do you think? Hooper or basketball player?
If I'm understanding the the definitions correctly, I feel like she would be a hooper.
Yeah, I think that's right. I kind of agree. Do you agree, Reed?
Definitely. I think she is the platonic ideal of a hooper in Pac-12 women's basketball this year.
Yeah, it's a great one. What do you got one, Reed, that you want to run by Maddie here?
Well, let's just go with the big names in the algorithm. Cameron Brink, what do we think? Hooper, basketball player?
I feel like she's more of a basketball player. I don't know. Yeah.
I feel like basketball player feels right for Cameron Brink to me, too. What do you think, Reed?
Yeah, that feels right to me.
Lauren Schwartz. That's the one. Yeah, that's what made
Hooper
me think
in a
of
bad
this.
Way.
there's always that player where you're just like, oh, okay, nice, she scored 25 on like 28 shots, but she was only one willing to shoot, but did we want her to shoot? I don't know. I think that's a great that's the one that made me think of it, is the hooper versus basketball player analogy. Other names that we can throw at you, your favorite player, Reagan Beers, hooper or basketball?
My favorite player.
I
don't know. I guess I didn't really get to see her when she was in Seattle, but like I assume basketball player, but I know she's like strong, so you know, she could be a hooper maybe. Yeah. Sometimes with that face mask.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Yeah. That's a good. I think that makes all the sense in the world. Reed, you got one?
Alyssa Peely.
Yeah, she's a hooper, I believe. Yeah, she does it.
Yeah, I think hooper. I definitely think hooper as well.
Yeah. Jewel. We're getting some deep ones here. All right, Maddie, we'll let you pick. We've got Jewel Lloyd being thrown around out there. This is for the obviously for the Seattle Storm. You want to go there? Do you want to go Esmeri Martinez for Arizona?
I don't think I've watched Esmeri Martinez enough, or I should have paid more attention. There's not very many players there. Jewel Lloyd is like, she was a hooper last year. I think Jewel Lloyd can be a basketball player when there's a point guard. Yeah, she can do what she needs to do either way.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. Reed, any other ones that you want to know desperately whether Maddie thinks they're a hooper or a basketball player?
I have to go with the hero, the most electric player from the Pac-12 tournament, in my opinion, Dom Perova, the double OT assassin for Oregon State, if you caught that game.
God, I forgot about
that. I didn't get to watch that game. So I'll get back to you.
She was a hooper in that game. She was an absolute hooper in double OT. Yeah.
was a basketball player in a lot of other respects too. So that's a good pull, Reed. Anyway, so that's where we're at right now. I want to ask you a little bit about the NCAA tournament, March Madness, really, really quickly, and then we'll make sure we don't take up too much more of your time. Obviously, we may get anywhere from 6 to 8, maybe 10, if God existed. Pac-12 teams in the NCAA tournament. I'm curious what's your sense? How well they'll fare? How far do you think do you think has the chance to go the furthest? And who do you think is maybe a team that's being slept on that you think could
as get of right far now? I do feel like I'm on the USC train, like in terms of teams that could go the furthest. Like, I think they really proved themselves in the Pac-12 tournament. You know, not that they needed to prove a lot, but maybe to me they needed to prove some things, like, or prove to everyone that they weren't just Juju Watkins. And I think they have the momentum now. I feel like they could go as far as they want. And I do still feel like UCLA too could be up there. But yeah, it was really questionable how UCLA versus USC, they had a couple times where they had 2 seconds left and the game was tied and they didn't even take a shot. So I don't know about that.
Don't remind me, Maddie.
So yeah, maybe if they figure that out, then maybe they can raise their chance of going further. But yeah, and teams that maybe people aren't like expecting. I am kind of annoyed that Arizona beat UW twice, but now I do feel like Arizona is a team that could like go into the NCAA tournament and just really annoy somebody, like win a game, maybe 2 games. I feel like Arizona can just brute force a win against someone. It feels like they can beat anyone really, like they beat Stanford at home. Anything can happen with that team.
Yeah, I think I have said many times, I think over the past, I feel like 2 weeks, Arizona's story is just, I mean, they look dangerous. That's the team I think that they are the most get that fucking team away from my team. Like they just, if I'm a UCLA fan and I had to play Arizona in the tournament, I would have a nervous breakdown entering into that game because they're tough. I mean, they have they're only playing like 7 scholarship players at this point, which is like, absurd. And that's obviously some of Adia Barnes's fault, but it does feel like they've kind of those 7 have bought all the way in and they look dangerous as hell right now. The Washington Arizona game was like so much fun. That was the most exciting game of Wednesday and the one that I was most excited for because those are 2 tournament teams. They both are really scrappy. But I think Washington just had the unfortunate run of running into a team that really looks like it's found something. Yeah, I don't know if you have anything else to say about that.
That was unfortunate. And my girlfriend keeps saying like she wishes UW could have played like literally any other team in the first round. Maybe they could have beaten them. But yeah, and like the other teams that are kind of on the bubble for the Pac-12, I think Wazoo is like the last 4 in or something. And I don't really understand that. Like they kind of seem like they're on the decline, although their net ranking is like 25 for some reason. And they lost to Cal by like 20 in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament. So I don't know if that means Cal should get in. It doesn't really feel like it, but I don't know. I feel like if Cal was in, they wouldn't like necessarily get very far. But yeah, it feels like Arizona could really do anything if the committee lets them in.
Yeah, they got to let him in. Per her hoop stats, and Megan Gower, they both Washington State and Cal are in the first four outline, so they would just miss at this point. But I think they've got to put them in, even though I think Washington State I wouldn't trust without Charlize Ledger Walker. I'm not sure how far they could go. Not sure they'd win a game without her. I guess we could find out. Now let's do a little bit of propaganda here, and I desperately need you to back me up on this, Maddie. I'm of the opinion that if South Carolina, the South Carolina, the team that's undefeated that everyone is talking about, were in the Pac-12, I am of the opinion that they would finish with no fewer than five losses. Am I out of pocket for saying this?
No fewer than five. Five seems like a lot.
They have to play like five top 10 teams. I mean, you know this. It's for everyone else. It's like South Carolina has had to play what, three ranked teams in conference play, including the tournament. And how many have like UCLA, USC, Stanford, Colorado, Oregon State? How many have they had to play? I mean, at least triple, right?
Yeah, Stanford hasn't played that many, so maybe Carolina had Stanford scheduled, maybe they would be undefeated still. But yeah, I do think there would be like definitely a lot higher chance that they would lose at least one, like they wouldn't be undefeated, but I don't know if they would lose five plus games in the Pac-12.
What about South Carolina makes you think that they are, I guess, you know, that would kind of put them at like the best team in the Pac-12. What makes you think that they're better than all the other Pac-12 teams in that sense?
I think they have a great coach, obviously, in Dawn Staley. And I don't get to like watch them a ton, but I know they have like a really deep bench. I think like basically the players that come off the bench could be starters hypothetically, or like play as much as the starters or score more than the starters. So I think just like the amount of players that they have, and yeah, their experienced coach, their coach that knows how to take a shot when there's 2 seconds left in the game.
All right. I should have, man, Maddie's never going to let me forget that. Okay. I think that's a good point though. You're absolutely right. Okay, I mean, I have watched one South Carolina game all season, and I still say confidently that mask off, they seem like a great team. Utah, which I think we would agree is like the sixth best team in the Pac-12, I think we all sort of feel like they never felt like major contenders either in the conference or, you know, the national title race. Felt like they could have been before they had a rash of injuries, including to their number two, Yana Neepkins. They lose Yana Neepkins, their number two, who looked like an all Pac-12 player coming into this season before the South Carolina game. And they're only within 5 points, I think, of South Carolina with like 90 seconds to go in that game. Obviously, South Carolina's biggest foe, their biggest rival right now, at least in the SEC, LSU, lost by Colorado to 14 earlier this year. Talk me out of it. Why am I out of pocket? Like, I can't, the Pac-12 just feels to me like it has been a gauntlet and a bloodbath and like the most bruising physical basketball that I have ever watched this season. It feels like every single week someone is like pouring blood all over the court, or is like breaking a nose or like busting an ankle. Like, it just feels like it has been a brutal physical gauntlet. I mean, I guess, if you were like trying really hard to convince me that South Carolina could survive that, like what am I missing?
I don't know. You know, I also like, yeah, like you haven't watched South Carolina that many times, but like another thing, I guess like South Carolina's players are really tall and really big. So, you know, I don't know, but to that point, like, matters. I guess they should have, you know, dominated Utah more. Like, Utah's like a little bit smaller and they shoot the three a lot more, and South Carolina's kind of the opposite. So yeah, I don't know, like I can agree that if South Carolina ran into like UCLA or USC in the NCAA tournament, like they might lose. Like, there's a good chance that South Carolina will get their first loss from them potentially. But yeah, I don't I don't have a specific reason, yeah, why South Carolina is better. But yeah, like.
Yeah, size matters for sure when it comes to basketball. Sometimes being 6'7 matters
yeah, sometimes.
Quite a bit for basketball reasons. If you had to pick right now the Pac-12 team most likely to win a national championship, you sort of talked about USC. Is it USC? Would you pick USC to be the team that could take down a South Carolina? Or is it someone else?
Yeah, truthfully, when I feel like USC taking on South Carolina, what that would look like, I would imagine South Carolina dominating USC. But again, I don't have reasons for that. But that being said, I feel like USC is, a more well-rounded team than I initially thought. You know, maybe UCLA, but yeah, as we've been talking about, the coaching maybe is not giving them any favors here. Maybe UCLA, but I think USC and maybe Stanford, but Stanford doesn't feel like a complete team themselves, but you never know.
Yeah, they don't feel particularly real. Yeah, and for my money, I think UCLA absolutely probably belongs in that conversation because they are balanced. But to your point, Court Close seems to I have kept up with UCLA women's basketball casually over the years, but never as in depth to get to the point where I have understood Corey Close and her late game decision making to the point where I can predict it. But people were telling me right before the first overtime, you know, it's 1.9 seconds left, they take a timeout. People are in my mentions telling me she's going to call for something. She's going to call for a pass out to the perimeter, and someone's going to like drive the baseline and kick it out for that design a play that's supposed to be two passes within 1.9 seconds. That's pretty much what happened. And then meanwhile, you know, it's like, I guess Dawn Staley did a good job of telling her center who never shoots to actually shoot the ball, and it ended up working. Now it's wide open. I'm not gonna go there. But I get it. I think that's a limiting factor. So we'll see what USC does. No Truck Stops has a new sponsor, and they are Project Repat. Project Repat turns your old t-shirts into a quilt. I got a quilt. I actually went to Project Repat first and bought one of these and absolutely loved the quality of this quilt. I have a lot of old Pac-12 t-shirts laying around. I don't use a lot of them. Some of them I did wear, but I kind of really wanted them on the quilt. And so I decided to put together this quilt and send an order to Project Repat. I paid for it out of my own money because I really, really wanted one. And it is fantastic. This is funny. I have a green screen. You can't see the Oregon one. It's actually black, so kind of interesting. But I've got all of these t-shirts that I've accumulated over the years from different Pac-12 schools on this t-shirt quilt. And it is fantastic. They have a lot of customization options. You got a lot of options for how to stitch the thing together. You can even, like I did, organize how exactly you want the blanket put together. I really wanted all the UCLA stuff at the bottom because I have a lot of UCLA shirts. And I wanted the more Pac-12 shirts at the center. So I basically designed this blanket myself, and Project Repat stitches it all together and sends it back to me in a really convenient way. I had a lot of fun doing this. I think it was a fun little project. You just cut out your t-shirts that you want on the quilt and send it into Project Repat. Project Repat stitches it all together, sends it back. It was a great experience, and I have a lot of memories with all of these old t-shirts. Some of them don't fit me anymore. Some of them are just worn out, and I wanted a way to hang on to them and to remember all of the things about the Pac-12 that I came to love. For example, this Made for Final Four t-shirt is one that I no longer wear. It was sitting at the bottom of my drawer, and that's when UCLA went to the Final Four in 2021. It's a fun time. Went to the Pac-12 basketball tournament last year. Got this Pac-12 basketball tournament t-shirt. And again, not something I wear on the regular, but it's a memory that I wanted to immortalize. So got this really cool blanket. Mine is fleece. You can get in a number of different materials. You can get a number of different organizations and arrangements of your t-shirts. It's really, really cool. Go check out Project Repat at projectrepat.com and tell us how you like it. Reed, do you have one last question about the NCAA tournament and the Pac-12 before we get out of here?
That's a good one. I mean, I was just on the USC conversation. I think it's interesting the fact that I think of like the best teams in the Pac-12 this year, and I go to the top four of Stanford, USC, Oregon State, and UCLA, and USC's beaten like all those teams twice, I think, now this season. They only lost to UCLA in that group and lost, I think, the first game of Pac-12 play. But weirdly, they've lost twice to Utah. You saw them lose kind of a head-scratching game, at least from a standings perspective, to Washington. Why do you think that they have leveled up so well against the best competition, but faltered in some of those, I guess, lesser games?
Yeah, that's really the question. I feel like this is just like speculation, but they're like a pretty mature team considering like they have like three grad transfer players that I guess are in their fifth year or so. I don't know. I feel like that keeps them like really consistent and strong. But yeah, to your question, I don't really know like why they would lose to a team like Utah. I guess Utah is kind of like hot and cold kind of team. Like if they are making all of their threes, I guess they could really beat anyone. But yeah, when their shots aren't falling, then they're not doing so well. So I guess like, yeah, USC is more consistent probably because of their players. And I guess they also have like a strong will to win. It seems like, especially even in the game, like where they lost to UW, like there was, you know, like in the end game where people are fouling and then people are shooting like Hail Mary threes, they came pretty close. Like they were getting there. Like they almost came back in like those last 10 seconds of the game. So yeah, I think like USC, if they're close, it feels like they're always in it. And yeah, you can't say that about every team.
That makes sense. The other team I wanted to ask about quickly was just Oregon State is probably like my favorite team this year. I feel like we didn't talk about them a lot. What do you think about Oregon State's outlook for the tournament?
I think they could also go pretty far in the tournament because I don't think, like we were talking about, not a lot of people watch the Pac-12 or get to watch the Pac-12. They might not be expecting Oregon State to be great this year. Like they've just heard of Juju Watkins and Lauren Betts or whatever. So I feel like Oregon State could surprise a lot of people, and they do have some good bigs to match up with like other teams' bigs, maybe South Carolina. Yeah, I feel like maybe they could be a South Carolina. I don't know why, but yeah, they also
as long as Reagan Beers is
not
in.
Without Reagan Beers. But yeah, I do like them as a team. I think my girlfriend thinks they're fraudulent. I think she says that because she thinks, you know, without Reagan Beers, that if you're like that bad, then you shouldn't be, I don't know, like rated that high. But I have heard also, maybe one of you had said this, I'm not sure, or like someone on a broadcast, that maybe it's not like the team is bad, but maybe it's more like a testament to the league itself. If a team is losing their best player, that they would like lose so bad to another team, that just shows how good the league is, not necessarily how bad the team is just because they lost without their best player. So yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
I mean, Washington, I mean, we talked about it on Twitter, like Washington, they're not a team at the end of the season that other teams can afford to lose their best player, right? They're just as dangerous as anyone else. And so the Oregon State loses without Reagan Beers to Washington, and Washington just capitalizes because they're that good. That is super helpful. Well, thank you so much, Maddie, for joining us. Tell us where people can find you.
So I post mostly on TikTok at WNBA Data. I make several videos a week about Pac-12 women's basketball, also NCAA women's basketball. And then when the WNBA season starts, I'll make a lot of those videos. I'm also on YouTube, also WNBA Data, one word. And I am hoping to make more actual YouTube videos as time goes on. Posted one last week. And yeah, also on Twitter or X or whatever. Also WNBA data, one word. So yeah, follow me there. And thanks for having me on the show today.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It was a blast. We'll make sure we get the links to all that in the bottom. That's it. That's all we have. Thank you so much again for joining us. This has been great. Thank you all of the people who tuned in to listen to Maddie and us yap about women's basketball. It was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it. And thank you again to Homefield for sponsoring this podcast. We'll be back next week. That's Reed. I'm Carlos. And what's the tagline? Oh, I don't remember, Reed. What am I supposed to say next?
Remember, there are no truck stops here.
And then someone else says, not even one. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
Rumors still and thick with smoke. So thick it makes you choke. The crowd bows in, the coffee's kicking, and my patience to everything. Said I'm lonelier than a single sax on a quiet city street. Things aren't always green. Side of the street. And I don't mind if the sun don't shine. Cloudy weather suits me fine. Pouring of the best wine on the boat tonight. I think.